Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here.
Today, over here.
Yeah. Today, Mike and I and Gary's going to call in, Gary LeMaster, and we're going to talk about oligarchy and how it affects it. The term oligarchy is an ancient Greek term. Ala means few. Archy is rule. So it means rule of a few. It tends to be the wealthy that rule a country. And there are different kind of oligarchies. But some of the most interesting stuff, which strangely, Mike, is people looking at how ancient oligarchies function.
Well, I can hear my dad saying, oh, knock it off. The rich people have been running stuff since the beginning of time. What are you pretending it just started? But what we had a republic here. We had a democracy, and I'm saying had in the past sense. So what kind of the themes of our last few shows, Steve, have been loosely the loss of democracy. When we did outlaw dirty money last year, and we talk about dark money in general, we're talking about the buying of government. We're talking now. People are afraid of the term, but I use it all the time because it's called fascism. When government and business get too close, make cozy deals that hurt people.
The definition of oligarchy is a rule by the few, and there are different kinds. And there's an argument among scholars where they were a civil oligarchy, which means that the oligarchy is controlled through manipulations of laws and money rather than military. In other words, there's not a military standing over us and forcing it. There's use of money and
yet.
Stuff.
So how does the oligarchy control us? What's the other way?
All right.
This is a
complex issue. Mike's going to be talking about Alex, and Gary's going to be talking about the Electoral College and the way
Alex is the American Legislative Exchange Council. This is where all of your conservative laws have come from for the last 30, actually it's 45 years old, but they just didn't write model legislation until the last 30 years. We're going to find out a lot about the American Legislative Exchange Council, Alec.
Let's talk a little bit about the fact that, for instance, we interviewed with Terry Goddard.
Yeah.
Terry Goddard has an organization. They've collected 285,000 plus signatures to outlaw dirty money. Americans for Prosperity, a Koch brothers front group, their oldest and largest front group, is leading the campaign to invalidate the signatures. They led the campaign to add all kinds of stringent, crazy requirements to the petitions. You have to have all these crazy requirements if you're having a petition like to get outlawed dirty money. You don't have to have them if you need signatures to get on the ballot. So it's completely disparate. So the thing is that the United States, if the scholars are right, how would this work? Let's ask ourselves this. Everybody has one vote, right, Mike? Mm-hmm. You know, one man,
so
one
far.
Vote, one person, one vote. The thing is that's the democratic element of the in the equation. The oligarchical element is that the wealthy have all the money. So if the Koch brothers have millions and millions of dollars, both surreptitiously and publicly, to spend on process, if money is free speech, then that undercuts our democracy. In other words, that's the oligarchical element. That's the control of the few. And as Mike said, it's always been with us.
A $1 billion gives you way more than one vote.
Yes.
Way more.
So on one hand, we're a democracy where you can still vote, most of us anyway. And on the other hand, we're an oligarchy, which we're controlled by this vast amount of money and surreptitious and public control of finances. So, and it's local. It's here in Sedona. I mean, American for Prosperity sent up organizers here to put a destructive initiative on the ballot here.
Hot little number jumped out of her Lamborghini at the Sedona Library with her petition in hand, and the first question out of her mouth after I stopped staring at her was, was I a registered voter? And as soon as she found out, I in Sedona.
So there's an an effort by the oligarchy and their most ideological supporters to control Sedona's finances, and they're largely by people who don't even live in Sedona. The whole initiative comes...
Why? Leave us alone. Because they can. Because they can?
Because
they're rich.
Well, there's two things. The thing is, Mike, there's the oligarchical, strictly rational interest. And then there's the ideological interests of people like the Koch brothers. Some of the stuff they do is ideology, a hatred of government. But look, if you can replace public spending by private spending, then the private spenders look like the good guys.
That's right.
In ancient Greece, what happened was that the oligarch cut down public spending. You can't build that building. You can't build that post office. You can't do this. You can't do that. But we can. We will build you a public building. We'll improve the plaza and so forth and so on. And so then we're the good guys. Look at what we're doing for you. So they would take a small portion of their money and power and use it to cultivate support. They were also, Mike was holding a sign up to me saying Fox News. But in the ancient world, what they tried to do was control information so that they could, so the oligarchy to rule best needs to be united. In other words, if they're in violent disagreements, particularly in third world countries, you end up in these coups and counter coups, which people really don't have much interest in. It's one set of dictators versus another. But what we see is that when we look at oligarchy, is that they need to control the information. In the United States, they have Fox News. So the oligarchs need to be united. They need to keep the people divided. So anytime we try to reform anything, the Fox News listeners stop it. They believe everything the oligarchs tell them. They don't listen to any other sources of news, and they block any kind of democratic reform. And when Mike talks about Alex, he's talking about one way they do it, but there's a whole bunch of different ways. And when we talk about the Koch brothers, there's the Koch brothers, but there's also this incredible organization of multimillionaires and billionaires that they put in. One guy who managed to listen in on one of their meetings said people were contributing money in $5 million increments. We cannot, and I think Michael agreed, we cannot have this amount of money dictating our politics and have a real democracy. The oligarchical elements are infiltrating and overriding the democratic element. If they control such a large portion of the media that does their deeds for them, then it's really hard to get anything going. But these are really interesting articles by scholars, Mike, and what they show is that the logic of being an oligarch has not really changed. That you need to be publicly beneficial. The Koch brothers, I think it's starting about 2010, started giving a lot of money to charity. You had an example, Mike and Nova. They're helping to fund Nova. Usually these are small sums of money for them.
Well, it was insane for me to see Charles and David Koch name all over PBS, public, you know, the educational station here in the United States, sponsored by various universities and what. It was, you know, these climate change deniers, these oil and gas company executives were funding all of these nature shows because this is the way Steve just mentioned that they try to have this public face on things.
So on the one hand, they oppose climate change and claim it doesn't really, it can't be affected by any government action.
That's it.
Yeah. They're a little bit cleverer than some of the guys on the far right.
We do want to step back. We're doing this, first of all, I want to say we're doing this on the eve of the oligarch, the biggest oligarch meeting of, Putin and Trump are meeting today. We're talking about a nation of oligarchs that Putin relies on and keeps these oligarchs in power.
It's interesting that Trump Putin now represents the oligarchy in Russia.
Okay.
It is controlled by an oligarchy much more extensively than here. Your chances of voting out any of these guys are minuscule. If you run against Putin, you end up in jail on some trumped up charges or you get assassinated. So it's worse than here.
It's worse than here. Okay.
We don't have that.
From Mar-a-Lago and the Kremlin, I have trouble telling the difference.
Well, the thing about it is that Trump was an outlier in the oligarchy.
That's
he never fit in. If the oligarchs like Koch, were much happier with Ted Cruz. They wanted Ted Cruz in. And don't idealize Ted Cruz. You can go back and read some of the speeches he gave, and they're astonishingly extreme and crazy.
He's a psychopath. I don't mind saying that. He's a psychopath.
Okay.
I took my counseling class, and I remember they put a little box on the board. And there's two ways of controlling people. There's two, and of course, this is for a teacher. I was supposed to control the classroom. There's two ways of controlling people, and it's information and it's money. And I forget what the other two were, but they pale to insignificance compared to information, Fox News, and money, oligarchs, period. That's how you control
even
everybody.
In the ancient world, they tried to hire a whole lot of people. You know,
I mean,
the Koch brothers have 60,000 people working in their industries. The industries is supposedly neutral, but they actually act as a lobbying group. So the thing is that there's a lot of people on their payroll, and Mike and I were talking about it before the show, is that, you know, if you're a conservative, there's a lot of money for you. You're a young conservative lawyer. There's all kinds of money and promotion. There's a whole system. If you're a young liberal lawyer, you're kind of on your own. So the money is flowing down. Now, let's go back. Oligarchy is the control of government by a few people. Democracy is control of the government by pretty much everybody. We have a participatory democracy, theoretically. And in American history, it's sometimes been much closer to an oligarchy than in others. So in the Gilded Age, when you have all those guys, all those cartoons with the guys, big fat guys with cigars, they believed in being big and fat because that showed they had a lot of money. Didn't live that long, a lot of them. But in the Gilded Age, you had one thing. When you had Teddy Roosevelt come in, breaking up the trust, when you had Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt coming in, supporting the Union, supporting the people's economic interests against the oligarchs, you have a decline of oligarchical power in the United States and a rise in democracy. We're now in a period where the oligarchical elements, think of it as almost like a cancer or some disease, are interpenetrating our democracy ever more. So Mike's going to talk to you about Ali.
Yeah, I want to get to this. Listen, I want to talk about two things. Don't forget, this. Listen clearly. Alec is a bill mill. This is their reason for existence. They write model legislation. So what we have, American Legislative Exchange Council gets lawmakers and corporate representatives together. They write their wish list. The corporations write their wish list legislation. And they vote on them, actually. The corporate representatives and the legislators in attendance, and a vast majority of the Arizona legislature belongs to ALEC. This isn't a fringe group. These are hundreds and hundreds of CEOs and corporations and rep and directors of marketing and directors of finance from business, and it's Arizona state representatives, it's Arizona legislatures, it's Arizona staff people, it's governors. They get together today. This year, it's in New Orleans on August 8th. You want to go check it out? Check it out. August 8th.
I don't think they're going to let us in, Mike.
Probably not.
Very reluctant in the past to let the press in in any form.
So this is what they do. They pay for a seat on ALEC, and where the corporations and the lobbyists get together and design their model legislation.
So what's in it for me? I'm an Arizona legislature. I just got there. I'm a conservative, but I'm kind of open-minded guy, and I get elected to the legislature. What's in it for me, Mike?
You're going to be able to be a good you're going to walk out with model legislation. You're going to walk out with 10 bills already written in Arizona's language, already written the way we write our laws, already written as if a staff of lawyers had put it together. Oh, because a staff of lawyers did put it together, a staff of ALEC lawyers put together this model legislation. They've been doing this now for 30. If you want to know why the laws don't represent the people, this is why, because they represent this organization.
Well, won't it help me become friends with lots of nice oligarchs?
Well, I guess it would.
Big money folks,
yes,
and won't
course,
they give
course,
me money because I'm now their pal and doing what they want?
Yes. This is like going to a Hollywood opening. If you wanted to meet Johnny Depp, This is the, you know, the Johnny, what you're going to meet these people that you've only heard about from different legislatures across the country, by the way, powerful Republicans, powerful lobbyists, powerful oligarchs, CEOs that you've only been able to read about are all going to be there. I want to talk, go real quick, the top five. This is a lot of this is out of the Center for Media and Democracy, by the way. This is the five most despicable laws passed by the corporate front. So what is ALEC? What is the American Legislative Exchange Council? What a wonderful little name. The American Legislative Exchange Council is a corporate front for getting business done in state legislatures.
Sounds good, though, Mike.
In state legislatures. Now, this is a little different. You know, it's not just this Democrats railing against the Republicans again, as far as I'm concerned. Now, you know, they would say this is, there's no better example of American free speech than ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. And I'm saying it's a criminal organization right along with what I consider the modern Republican Party. But here's the number one, banning living wages. I have to read a little bit. ALEC claims to be a conservative group that stands for limited government, as we are experiencing here in Sedona. One of the reasons they want you to vote against home rule is because they want limited government. Everybody's in fact.
The more limited the government is, the more power the oligarchs have.
That's it.
Right. The only way to limit their power basically is through physical action, demonstrations, and so forth and so on, or voting.
But in other words, part of ALEC's principles is and the Center for Media says banning living wages. The organization has worked to ban local and city governments from setting their own wage laws. This is how they ban living wages. You know, people in Seattle, people in Sedona, people in Cottonwood, and we know what it takes to live here. We know how much it takes to pay the rent and eat. And so we want to pass, we have a responsive city council, a responsive government, we want to pass laws that will help people be able to live and work in the communities that they live in. But ALEC has these wonderful little things, state laws, that prevent cities and localities from passing their own wage laws. ALEC uses the model legislation known as Living Wage Mandate Preemption Act to stop cities from deciding how they spend their own taxpayer money by declaring that contracts with government contractors must pay living wages. After Atlanta, Georgia passed a law saying it will only use taxpayer money to hire contractors who pay living wages, that pay living wages, the state legislature passed an ALEC bill to ban the city from being able to control its own wage limits. That's in the city of Atlanta. I want number two, crippling collective bargaining. This is a big deal. We grew up, at least I grew up, people in my age group grew up believing that people had a say in what happens to them within their corporation, just like you did in your government. Because after all, we lived in a democracy where the power was with the people. But that hasn't been true for a long, 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 long time. That collective bargaining, binding collective bargaining, is what all union people look for when they go to a state. Does this corporation have to go along with the agreement that we make? Real quickly, when state legislatures around the country started introducing right-to-work bills that would cripple, they weren't acting alone. These bills mirrored model legislation pushed by the American Legislative Exchange Council to undermine labor rights and crush the unions that middle-class Americans rely on for good wages and benefits. You can say what you want about Jimmy Hoffa and corrupt unions. And I've been singing his mantra for 7 years on this show, but I wish I said it every week. And that is, yeah, there's lots of things wrong with the union. Their money corrupts, and maybe more so in unions. However, there's only one entity that looks out for working men and women, and it's not your boss. He's looking out for his bottom line and his corporate shareholders. Don't get me wrong, there are some beautiful places to work. I guess I keep hearing about Costco, but you need, in many cases, in this country, in the USA, a union to look out for you. You need somebody that can represent you in that office.
One of the things you're saying here, Mike, is the purpose of this council in some way is to limit wages. Because if you limit the amount of money people have, they're more dependent on their job. If you were to get rid of unemployment, people would be scared to ask for a decent wage, more so.
Yes. Third horrible thing that ALEC does is privatizing our schools. We hear a lot about this. School vouchers is an ALEC thing. All those programs came out of ALEC, all those bills, nationwide, Illinois, Arizona. Arizona, as far as I'm concerned, started it. But there were inklings of it in Florida, all over the country, privatizing our schools, the whole school voucher system, under the joke, the lie of choice. They came up with a school voucher program. One of the ways that makes them rich. Two-thirds of the Arizona legislature is first personally involved in Arizona charter schools.
Some of them have gotten extraordinarily rich on public money for these charter schools. Charter schools are at least sort of regulated a little bit, but there are other schools now that we're pouring public money in. There's no regulation. They don't have to hire trained teachers. They don't have to teach anything that makes sense. They just have to present themselves as a school. One of them used to be owned, but no longer is, by Sylvia Allen, who managed to drain quite a bit of money out of that thing before she stepped aside.
Well, plus it was a failing school. I want to talk. So this is one of the things that ALEC is responsible for, a system where public taxpayer money is used to line the pockets of private schools, which are so unpopular that they used to exist only in a handful of school systems nationwide, that we would repeatedly shut down these laws in national polling. We would repeatedly shut down this idea. No, we don't want a private school. Yet in 2011, there was a huge push in various state legislatures for the expansion of school voucher systems. The push was coordinated by the American Legislative Exchange Council. It's that simple. Other big money financiers, like who's the guy that does the computers? Bill Gates.
I've heard that name before.
He was a big proponent of, for at least in the beginning, until he saw what happened to it, of charter schools and using tax money for private schools. There's two more things that, the big things, attacking voting rights. We talked a little bit about this last week.
So you have a democracy, but if the oligarchy can attack people's voting rights, and Gary talked about this last week, I think we've got him on the air now listening, then you can limit the democracy. In other words, if you can undercut voting rights, then you undercut democracy and you can maintain a better control.
But if you cut through enough of these laws being passed nationwide, they originated as model legislation with ALEC. ALEC, they authored model laws inspiring numerous bills to enact onerous voter ID laws. This is one of those problems that didn't exist. No, there was no voter fraud. There might have been two or three people out of millions that voted because they by mail and then they forgot and went in and voted. Maybe, and that's a maybe. So the laws attacking voting rights, the model legislation comes from ALEC. The last one I want to talk about is selling prisons to the highest bidder. These are the five things that have come out of ALEC, the privatizing our schools, attacking voting rights, crippling collective bargaining, and banning living wages have all come out of ALEC. And the last one, which is to me the most onerous, by the way, because you know how this works. They get paid as long as the beds are full. So we want to keep our fellow citizens in prison. We talked about mass incarceration. When we introduced this show, Democratic Perspective, we in our blurb is mass incarceration because we think it's a big deal. We think putting 2.2 million Americans in jail, more than North Korea, of course we're not always sure how many. Maybe that's one thing Trump found out down there in Singapore.
I don't think he found out anything.
He said, Un, how many guys you got in jail? We just want to know for our
record. I think he just got taken for a ride.
Just
he
for
legitimized
our
this guy just like he's legitimizing Putin. Well, I don't think he's not getting anything substantial. Watch this whole thing with North Korea, folks. I don't think it's going to deliver anything that, that
it doesn't
Trump
matter. He's already got the boost in the
I know
in the and the popularity polls.
Gary, are you there?
Excuse me, I am.
Okay, Gary.
Good morning.
Good morning, Gary. And Mike's been talking about Alex, and I talked about the mix of oligarchical elements and democratic elements in the United States, how they mix. And what we wanted you to talk about was what you want to talk about. What's your story today, Gary?
Well, first I'd just like to say that the whole oligarchy has been proven by a very scientific study by Princeton and Northwestern universities. And I will put that up on the blog post on our website. It's pretty telling in that it shows that the wealthy corporations and lobbyists actually have far more influence in Congress than individuals or groups of individuals. So
that's the Gillens and Page study, right, Gary?
Yeah, exactly. So I'll put that up along with links. The information about Alec and then what I'm going to talk about. But what I wanted to really mention was the unintended consequences of our system of representation, and when the Constitution was drafted, the most populous state in the Union had 10 times as many people as the least populous state. Now that is... the most populous, California, has more than 68 times more people than the least populous state of Wyoming. So what matters about that is the representation in Congress, in that both states have two senators each. So that means that California has 19.77 million people per senator, while Wyoming has fewer than 300,000 people per senator.
So let's go over that again. So California, it takes about 20 million people are represented by a senator. And in Wyoming, what, about 300,000 people are represented by a senator? That's a huge difference.
Yeah, a little less than 290,000 for Wyoming. So it's a huge difference in the representation in Congress, in the Senate. Of course, you know, that's somewhat countered by the representation in the House. But where it really matters is in the Electoral College, because the Electoral College is based on the number, each state has the number of electoral votes that equal the number of representatives they have in Congress. So that gives Wyoming... three electoral votes, and it gives California 55. But where that really jumps out is that California has, Wyoming has 3.3 times more influence. A vote in Wyoming has 3.3 times more influence than a vote in Arizona, and 3.7 times more influence than a vote in California.
I guess if it was representative, the Electoral College at California should have 66 instead of, 55 Electoral College votes.
Exactly. And when you see the map, I can't emphasize this enough, when they show the maps of red versus blue on national elections, and you see this mass of red throughout the South and the central part and much of the West of the U.S., it looks like the country is overwhelmingly Republican. But the actual reverse is true. And it only shows how unpopulous the states, the red states, are, where most of the population is on the two coasts, the East Coast and the West Coast. The Electoral College really distorts the influence that an individual voter has. It's true of states like you know, I picked on Wyoming, but it's no different really for North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, and Alaska. And then you, each of those has three electoral votes. They have, let's see, if you look at California, they have 718,000 members or citizens per electoral vote, where Wyoming has 193,000 per electoral vote. And, you know, the disparity continues through the other red states.
So this wasn't intended to be a distortion. Originally, they wanted the Senate to balance the rights of, they were afraid that the small states would dominate the big states. And so they, part of the Senate was originally set up to control the pure democracy. Yes, this is what the founders wanted. But when they set this up, the disparity you're saying was much, much smaller. It was a six times smaller than it can be now.
Yes, and the Electoral College was really the result of a series of compromises that you had what was called the Connecticut Compromise and the Three-Fifths Compromise. It was really made necessary by the reluctance of the southern states, you know, what became the Confederate states, to join the Union. They were afraid that because, you know, only white people could vote, they had, at that time, white men, that they had much less representation than the northern states that didn't have the large slave population. So it was the result of a series of compromises. And it was also based on the lack of education at the time, that it was, you know, feared that most of the, or many of the potential voters didn't have the education to be able to read and to inform themselves. And so the Electoral College was a way of compensating for that. Of course, now that's been outmoded by our, you know, public schools. But, I think it's best exemplified by what Alexander Hamilton said about the Electoral College. He called it a small number of persons selected by their fellow citizens from the general mass that will be most likely to possess the information and discernment requisite to such complicated tasks as electing our officials.
Hamilton aside, the Electoral College seems to have outlived its usefulness and needs to go. I understand that, I don't know, by 2050, I guess, over half the country will live in eight cities. Too bad. I'm okay with that. If this is America, you want to live in those eight cities, then you should have the representation that matches the people that live around you, that match the people in those eight cities. If representation isn't too important to you, then move to Wyoming or Montana and have a good time with whatever you want to have a good time with.
The thing is, I'm sorry, Gary, I was going to point out that the Electoral College has been very different in two votes in recent years. Both of them favored a Republican who received less votes than a Democrat. I mean, this has happened twice. If it happened, and it was one time it favored Republicans, another time it favored the Democrats, you could say, well, maybe it kind of evens out. But when you have a process where what you see is it always favoring the Republicans, this structure is then somehow informed in such a way as to create this disparity.
Well, if you look at it from the left, we got two Republican regimes that were horrible for working people, made their friends all a lot richer, Halliburton, and this one, I can't even begin to, his friends are getting rich so fast that he can't even, their heads are spinning. So that's what happened. So it's not just a little thing. You got these two Republican regimes that take the country 180 degrees away from where the people want it to go.
Yeah, from the popular vote, Gary. I mean, Is it an accident that both of these have favored conservative Republican regime? Maybe it is. I know that the founders wanted to be fair. It's not that, but it's 200 years later plus, and the system maybe is really outmoded now. And the other thing is that our ability to count votes and to count them quickly has improved a lot.
Yeah, I think Mike hit it on the nail on the head with the population shift to large cities. What has been true for some time now is that the Republican Party has generally been the party of the wealthy and of rural America, and the Democratic Party has been the party of working people and in urban America. And that shift is taking place at a far greater pace. And what this is going to mean is that unless there are changes made to the Electoral College, it's going to mean that year after year, election after election, we're going to see Democrats have the majority of the popular vote, and Republicans at least fairly regularly controlling the electoral vote.
How important in all of this? We've got the Electoral College, which seems to be a structurally have problem, but we also have gerrymandering. How does that fit into this one man, one vote, one person, one vote issue?
Well, it has a large impact. I'm not sure it's as large as the Electoral College, but I think one bit of information, one statistic, kind of points to the issue of gerrymandering. You know, the Republicans have been very, very aggressive with gerrymandering in recent years.
Because they control state legislatures, by the way. Go ahead.
Many, many years ago, and they've used it as well, but now it seems to be almost exclusively the goal of the Republican Party. And so one statistic really jumped out at me is that on average in the 2016 election, Democratic candidates won their elections by 112,000 votes, while Republicans won their elections, these are district elections, by 97,000. So 112,000 to 97,000. That's almost a direct result of gerrymandering. In other words, you divide up the population. Let's say you pick on the African-American population, and you want them to have less influence. So you split them up from one district to another so that they become a minority in every district. So they have zero representation. Where, the alternative is to put them, in the same district, and so they can have elect their own representation.
Sure, I understand.
Both systems are somewhat flawed. I mean, there can be abuses on both sides, but it really, if you look at the gerrymandered districts, especially in states like North Carolina, they look like snakes.
Tell us why 97,000 got it. I understand gerrymandering. We've seen the gerrymandered maps. They're almost by house. Forget about neighborhood. They got a line drawn around these three houses that are Republican.
Innovation.
97,000 versus 112,000. So what? I mean, I don't understand the significance. It doesn't sound that big, quite frankly. Tell me why it matters between 97,000 and 112,000.
Well, it shows that they've lumped Democratic voters into districts where they have, they're able to elect their representatives by substantial margins, and they've configured the districts so that they can actually, with fewer votes, they can take more districts. So the results of the gerrymandering is that if a state has 15 districts or representatives, you can configure it so that even though the Republicans are a minority in the state, they can take the majority, say 9 of the 15 districts.
Got it.
And pack the other districts with Democratic voters. That's what that statistics.
And I said, I want to expose that thinking. So here you are, a Republican strategist. You're saying, how can I win with less votes? How can I destroy the democratic process, which has been the theme of the Democratic Perspective radio show here the last few weeks and the next couple of weeks, is the weakening American democracy. How can I yet further weaken American democracy? Oh, I know. I'll get my candidate to win with fewer votes. Forget about trying to get every American to vote. Forget about that American ideal of getting people to honestly vote. Forget that. I want to keep them from voting, no matter how qualified they are to vote, and I want my side to vote so my side gets in, even though it doesn't, repeat, does not represent the people. This is a party that's a criminal organization, like I said. They had to think of all of this with their gerrymander. Now, we understand the Democrats gerrymander, too, to gain some advantage. But to gain an election, to purposefully say we want to keep the other side's votes to not matter, and we want our votes to matter more than they do. The last two things I want to say about the American Legislative Exchange Council, number one, when I went off, we're talking about this is where your legislation has come from for the last 30-plus years, and there's still, in 2018, we found out about the American Legislative Council back in 2003. We found again back in 2011, the Center for Media and Democracy did a big thing, ALEC exposed. And corporations started quitting. Coca-Cola quit. Lots of Blue Cross Blue Shield quit when people found out they were in the American Legislative.
Well, I think one thing, Mike, that I'd like to mention in connection with that is the way that the Koch brothers organizations have really infiltrated the Republican Party, and the whole libertarian Koch brothers elite stifling a vote has infiltrated the whole Republican Party. So you almost see in a place like Sedona, the Republican guys I've been invited to their meetings and so forth and so on. They seem to have faded into the woodwork. And what's come out in the fore are much more extreme libertarian, so-called libertarians, because not really libertarian, and Tea Party people. They seem to have actually taken over the Republican Party.
Absolutely. And they say it's not. So we want to mention two things real quickly, that those companies are coming back. Blue Cross Blue Shield is back in ALEC. All these companies that made a big deal out of leaving and said, well, we're not going to be controlled by this right-wing organization, a lot of them are coming back now in 2018, lots and lots of them. So you'd have to look at their list. And there's so many corporations. We're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of corporations. And 2018, there's no answer to this on the left. George Soros, if you're listening out there, Robert Redford, I don't know any rich Democrats, but any rich Democrats out there listening to us, please start let's call it a National Legislative Exchange Council and get Democratic legislation before these.
But Mike, it's about money. And there are wealthy Democrats, but we're talking about oligarchical control, which is a web of people
to
structure the government.
What I remember is the
Koch
brothers sending buses all over the country when the Tea Party started. And I've been asking for a Democrat to do that. Please, Tom Strayer, send the buses to Sedona. We'll get on. We'll go to D.C. And we will look like the Tea Party did in 2007. Anyway. But we want to make sure that you listen to this show and all our shows. It's a heavy-duty political season, folks. Democratic Perspective has lots of things going on, lots of candidates. Please listen to our old shows. You can find them at vvid.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org. You can find them at tunein.com. You can find our shows on the web in various places. Democratic Perspective is everywhere. We want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks for their wonderful support. And by the way, if you got an extra couple of bucks, send it to Steve Williamson. He could use it too. Tante Beck needs a new pair of shoes. Thanks, folks. See you next time.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.